Hello, my friends. It's Monday, January 26th, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your weekday morning wake and bake, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. On today's smoke session, let's talk about the cold-blooded execution of Alex J. Preddy. Also, how Trump tacos Greenland, and an update on the Board of Peace. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
Where are we?
I think you know.
This is where they brought you. And the rest of the 4,400.
Yes, this is where they altered us. Give me the ability to create the world we've been living in for the last 8 years.
We're back with our hashtag Tubi TV night, where I watch the free Tubi TV app and recommend shows and movies for you to watch there. We've been binging a series that appeared on the Fox network in the early 2000s, 2004 or 5, somewhere around there. It's called The 4,400. And the premise of the show is that 4,400 people were stolen by aliens throughout history, going back to the 1930s. And then one day in 2004, they all just show up. They all appear in the Pacific Northwest, and as the series unfolds, it turns out that they've been altered by these aliens, and so each show is kind of an X-Files sort of procedural, where we find out who's got what power and how they're manifesting it. Anyway, we've been following this show for a while, and we had to take a break on it, because there was this episode that was an entire dream episode. Yeah, apparently the setup here is our lead actor wakes up one day and nobody knows what's going on in reality. He thinks there's a 4,400. In this reality, there was no 4,400. And he's married and has a wife of 8 years, and all his kids are fine. No bad things ever happened to him. They were never abducted by aliens. And this was all a simulation in this woman's mind, who was altered by the aliens, but now the simulation's over, and so she's back in the real reality of the 4,400, and nobody knows who she is except the guy who was mentally married to... My God, it's just a mess. And it's not like the guy can act anyway. I continue watching this show just because of how bad it can be, I guess. I don't know. If you like to hate watch something, the 4,400 is out there. They got 4 seasons, and this is about toward the end of season 2 where it gets all dream sequency. So your mileage may vary.
Your parents ever try to get you interested in sports?
But I'm interested in sports and in building.
What do you think of sports?
As I told you earlier, she wasn't interested in sports.
Well, congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks and the New England Patriots making their way to Super Bowl 60. They last met in Super Bowl 49, and we all remember what happened when Pete Carroll decided to throw a pass at the goal line.
With 26 seconds to play in Super Bowl 49, Seattle trailed by 4, but had the ball second and goal from the Patriots' 1-yard line. A game-winning touchdown seemed imminent.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
So let's hope that this Super Bowl, the Seahawks can get some revenge, because the New England Patriots do not need any more Super Bowl trophies. I think they should have been on timeout for the next 20 years after the whole Tom Brady era. We cannot allow them to get another Super Bowl trophy, so I've got to root for the Seahawks, and good job for them. outlasting the Rams. It was a fantastic NFC championship game that the Rams pretty much gave away, blew a punt and gave up a touchdown at the end of the half. It was there for them to win, and they blew it. And then, of course, the Denver Broncos AFC championship hopes were dashed the minute Bo Nix broke his ankle at the end of the previous game. Though, let's give some credit to that backup quarterback for the one good pass that he threw, the only touchdown scored by the Broncos in a 10-7 snowstorm defeat.
How about breaking up this sewing circle and getting into a jam session?
Some very odd reports have come through about a jam session this weekend at the phone booth.
Oh, it's no party, just a jam session.
Had a jam session up there, right out of this world.
Yeah, jam session is taking a little tune you all know and doing things with it.
All right, as you know, I am also a professional bass player trying to get back out there in front of people and on stages. You may have been following my hashtag bass playalongs. I've got a YouTube channel out there, radicalrust.com/YouTube. Maybe some of you are actually listening to this podcast through that outlet. But if you want to check out my musical side, check out the bass playalongs playlist. I've got like 22 or 23 of them out there, all sorts of different genres with the tab sheet music as I'm playing, so you can kind of learn along. I got a note from my former intern and good friend Calico Castile, who's been picking up the bass guitar, says it's been helping him play some bass. And to that end, I headed out to a jam session at the Trophy Club in Medford, met up with some guys that I had first met when I first came out to this valley 3 years ago and just started picking up the bass to play. So it was good to see those guys again, Kevin and George and some of the rest of them. Nick was out there. Also met some new people who were quite thrilled with my bass playing and singing abilities. Got kind of a big fish in a small pond thing going on here. I mean, if I drove up to Portland, I would just be one of many bass players somewhere in the middle of the pack, but here in Southern Oregon, I'm near the top. So hope I see you out there sometime, and if I get any gigs, I'll let you all know.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Cold-blooded murder.
There's nothing complex about cold-blooded murder.
Define cold-blooded murder.
Brutal violence to intimidate and cold-blooded murder to silence any who dared protest.
All right, of course, our main story this morning comes to us from Saturday. The cold-blooded execution in the streets of an observer, an ICU nurse named Alex J. Preddy. You've all seen the videotapes by now, three or four different angles of this. And I just want to go through this kind of, I don't really have a plan for talking about this. My emotions are all over the place. But it is kind of interesting, something that I posted, and I posted it that morning, but I had posted it before I had checked my newsfeed. Right. So I had no idea that the Alex Preddy killing had happened. And I wrote, perhaps one positive outcome of all of this is the utter dismantling of the Second Amendment is there to protect all the other amendment rights and to put down a tyrannical government myth, so that post-Trump we might finally develop sensible 21st century gun laws. Maybe, if we're lucky. So I posted that, and then I noticed it was doing numbers, getting tons of likes and reposts. So I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I talk about the Second Amendment every now and then, but that's kind of weird. Then I checked the newsfeed, and to find that the administration was out there saying that this wild, lawless protester, this anarchist, this assassin, was running through the streets of Minneapolis with a loaded handgun and a couple of clips, brandishing it. He came at the officers with a gun. And so they disarmed him and he resisted and they had to shoot him in defense. That's what Christy Noem and all the rest of the apologists for the administration are saying. So you've seen the tapes, right? And we know exactly what happened. The ICE goons, he was out there directing traffic, holding a phone, videotaping like many people do, and trying to get cars around what the ICE goons were doing. ICE goons approach. He's backing up, still holding the phone up. The goons pull out the pepper spray him and a woman. The woman falls back from the pepper spray. he's trying to help her. And that's when she gets, he's trying to help her. He's putting his body between the ice goons and the pepper spray. The goons force him down to the ground. There's four, five, six of them on top of him. They disarm him. And then 10 shots ring out as multiple ice goons shoot this guy dead in the streets. The ice goon who disarmed Preddy runs away from the scene with the weapon. The rest of the goons stop the local law enforcement from being able to secure the scene. None of them are performing CPR on Mr. Preddy as he lies there bleeding out. A physician who had seen it go down from his apartment window runs out to see if he can assist. Finally gets the ice goons to let him assist. He finds Preddy lying on his side, which he wouldn't do for someone who'd recently been shot, not on his back. Nobody's performing CPR. And according to the physician, it appeared that the ice goons were busy counting the bullet holes in the man. We also heard the video where one of the ice goons remarked, "It's a lot like Call of Duty, huh?" Where it's all just a big joke to them. And immediately, before the man's body was even cold, Christy Noem, the head of the Department of Fatherland Security, and the rest of them are out there spreading vicious lies. The first thing they came out and said, he approached law enforcement with a weapon, which was their way of getting you to infer that he had a weapon drawn, that he was brandishing a weapon, which was absolutely not true. He was a licensed concealed handgun carrier. He was legally allowed to be carrying that weapon. And this immediate response from Noem and Homan and Bovino and all of the ice goons and J.D. Vance, he had a weapon. I think they're going to start to wake up some of the Second Amendment guys out there. He was lawfully carrying. Are you saying now that lawfully carrying anywhere near where police action is taking place is license for them to straight up murder you? Because what good is the Second Amendment when cops are trained to shoot you at the mere sight of a gun? What's the point? I hope a whole lot of Second Amendment people are starting to wake up on this one. And look, I'm a concealed handgun carrier too. Alex J. Preddy could have been me. I'm 20 years older than the man, but it could have been me. If there'd have been ice going down here in my neighborhood, I'd have been one of those guys out there with whistles. I'd have been one of those guys out there with a phone trying to document all this. And if I saw them pushing down and trying to harm a woman, I'm the kind of guy who would have stood in between, the kind of guy who would have tried to help. And if they'd have thrown me to the ground and found my 9mm in my bag with my two loaded clips, I'd be dead today, too. So I hope we recognize what the Second Amendment has always really been about is the right of right-wing white men to carry guns. Because you know all the gun control laws that got passed, the Mumford Act, all that kind of stuff in California that got passed once the Black Panthers started exercising their Second Amendment rights to open carry long rifles. And it's kind of interesting to me, too, because this ties into our other story we're going to talk about a little later on Trump and Greenland. But notice how Trump goes and threatens Greenland, says we got to have Greenland. We absolutely have to have Greenland. Boy, we can't put it past having boots on the ground in Greenland. Boy, the United States military, we would absolutely decimate anyone who stood in our way. It would be so easy. We could just take Greenland if we wanted to. And then European countries, some of the NATO countries said, oh, okay, we're going to send some boots on the ground. We're going to put some soldiers there, and if you put any American boots on the ground, we will shoot at them. We will kill you. Also, we're going to start selling off your treasuries and tanking your markets. And what do you know? Trump chickened out. Trump tacoed. You threatened him with violence and economic downfall, and he ran away like a scared little boy. Yet, us in Minnesota, us in Portland, us in New York, us in Chicago, we the people, we're supposed to just do nonviolent resistance and record with our phones. That'll get him to change. Seems like the only thing that gets the bully to stop asking for the lunch money is to punch him in the nose and to threaten his lunch money. I don't want to get to that. I don't think it needs to get to that. I want to believe in nonviolent resistance. But has that time passed? Are we past the point of nonviolent resistance? Because part of what made nonviolent resistance work was putting those scenes of fire hoses and beatings and dogs on the national TV where the entire nation could see it and Walter Cronkite could tut it. And we could all have some sort of collective morality. But does that even exist anymore? We're so siloed into our own little information ecosystems that there's an entire third of this country that right now believes Alex J. Preti was some sort of agitator terrorist paid by George Soros brandishing a firearm with the intent on slaughtering law enforcement. They really believe that. That's why this administration can come out and just bald-facedly lie every time. Because they know their clip is going to get in front of the eyeballs of their people. And the actual clips aren't. Because now we're starting to get news that TikTok is censoring anti-ICE and anti-Trump sentiments. Because these media conglomerates have recognized that if they anger the orange toddler, their billion-dollar mergers don't go through. Or in the case of TikTok, they'll get banned or bought up by someone else. Everybody needs to be on their best behavior for the fascists. Can't let anti-Trump, anti-ICE things propagate through TikTok and build that national consciousness like what happened in the 60s. We've got to keep enough of the base, enough of the United States, enough of the rural whites in perpetual fear that the cities are on fire 24/7 and that anarchic Black Lives Matter woke terrorists are coming for their guns, gonna trans all their kids. They live in this alternate reality. And the other thing I want to get off my chest on this is I wonder how Marie Glusenkamp Perez feels about the killing, the murder of Alex J. Preti. I wonder how Henry Cuellar feels about having voted to fund ICE. Seven Democrats joined with almost all of the Republicans to pass a bill just last week, 220 to 207, seven Democrats joined to pass that ICE funding. Seven Democrats said, you know, these guys with the guns that are out there in Minneapolis shooting Renee Good in the face and shooting Alex J. Preti in the back and taking guys out in their underwear and Crocs in freezing cold weather and abducting five-year-olds and using them as bait and separating two-year-olds from their parents and tear-gassing neighborhoods and causing infants to go into shock and foam at the mouth and lose consciousness. You know those guys? Let's give them some more money. Seven Democrats agreed for that. Seven Democrats put their stamp of approval on what ICE is doing. And the kicker on that, like I mentioned, the vote was 220 to 207, a 13-vote margin. If all seven Democrats had remained united with the rest of the party, if the entire Democratic Party had voted in unison no on that ICE funding bill in the House of Representatives, it would have failed by one vote. Couldn't be bothered. Henry Cuellar got to feel like he's going to get voted out somehow if he doesn't support the ICE goons. Marie Glusenkamp Perez, nominally Democrats. And I am really tired of having Democrats in our caucus who can't be counted on to vote with us on matters of critical importance, on things that should be bedrock principles for the Progressive Party, for the Liberal Party, for the left-wing party. Like, don't fund federal troops to kill innocent protesters should be right on the top of the list, right up there with don't fund genocide in Gaza and don't treat women like second-class breeding slaves. But Democrats, oh, well, we have to have a big tent. We have to have some pro-life Democrats. We have to have some pro-fascism Democrats. Or we won't ever... I'm tired of hearing it. I want to have a party that believes in something, even if that party has to be in a minority. I want to belong to a party that I know what it believes in, that it doesn't put its finger up to the wind and say, oh, well, it's Texas. We got to let Henry Cuellar be pro-life. Sick of it. The other thing that's been interesting to watch happen is the news media finally, slowly dragging their heels, but finally escaping the exonerative tense. You know, the exonerative tense, that's what pops up anytime there's a officer involved shooting. A gun went off and a person is dead. We have no idea who shot the gun, who owned the gun, where the gun was pointed. There was an officer involved shooting. Yeah, the exonerative tense. Well, they started to with this story. The New York Times originally came up with a headline that said, a person was shot dead today during a struggle with federal agents in Minneapolis, according to officials. Who was shot dead? The federal agent? A person? Who did the shooting? The federal agent? The person? But as the videos came out, angle after angle, so clearly demonstrating the absolute lying going on, even the media, even the news media, had to start using the active voice. From the New York Times, Minneapolis Live updates, man killed by federal agents was holding a phone, not a gun. Man killed by federal agents? Somebody did something? Wow. Continues, video analyzed by the New York Times appears to contradict federal accounts of the shooting. Appears to contradict. Well, we're getting closer, right? Not so bad. And if this were a movie being written, the two victims of extrajudicial murder by ICE goons are named Pretty and Good. The editor would tell you that that's a little too on the nose. Pretty Good, huh? Tom Emmer, his statement, the GOP majority whip who represents Minnesota, he retweeted the picture from Homeland Security. Fatherland Security tweeted out, at 9:05 a.m., a DHS law enforcement officers were conducting a targeted operation in Minneapolis against an illegal alien wanted for violent assault. An individual approached U.S. Border Patrol officers with a 9mm semi-automatic handgun, shown here. Then they show the picture of the gun, right? Once again, making you infer, oh, he approached officers with a 9mm as if he had it out and was brandishing it and was threatening the officers with it, rather than he was legally carrying it in a holster behind his back. Tom Emmer quoted that and said, the governor and local leaders' rhetoric has empowered criminals and put federal law enforcement's lives at risk. It's dangerous and has made the situation in Minneapolis much worse. Unlike my Democrat colleagues, I'm going to let law enforcement conduct their investigation and not jump into asinine conclusions. We are grateful no Border Patrol officers were harmed. Dangerous rhetoric. Yeah, it's our rhetoric. It's calling them Gestapo. Bovino was out there saying this too. It's calling them Gestapo, calling them Nazis. That's the problem. Not them shooting people, gassing people, breaking down doors, asserting the right to ignore the Fourth Amendment. Insane. And it appears that the Democrats in the Senate might be forced by the overwhelming video evidence to have to grow a spine again and shut down the government. Our first statement came from Chuck Schumer, who said, ICE out of Minnesota now. Gee, if only you had some power to make that happen. Like, to that end, we Democrats in the Senate will not allow the bill funding ICE to move forward until Minnesota state law enforcement are given full authority to investigate the now two murders by ICE agents. That should be the bare minimum. And apparently, as time went on, Chuck grew some spine, sought out those seven Democrats in the Senate, the Fettermans and the, you know, Angus King types, who'd get wishy-washy and weak in the knees, the ones who gave in last time and allowed the Republicans to absolutely decimate our health care funding in order to give the money to these ice goons. They traded our health care for murder in the streets. Well, now it looks like they're going to stand up again, and Schumer's being all brave, saying we're not going to fund this, no funding going forward, and let's hope they stick to it this time. But that should be the bare minimum. No funding going forward until local law enforcement is given the full authority to prosecute and investigate these and the future incidents that will happen. Let's hope they can stick to that. And there's some people out there that might be asking, you know, why did this guy go to the protest with a handgun anyway? Sure, he's legally allowed to do so. He's legally allowed to do so. Minnesota's an open carry state, and he had a concealed handgun permit, so he was double okay to do so. But why do that? Why take a handgun to a protest in the first place? Like, don't you, you think you're going to shoot it out with the cops? You'd be dead the minute you pulled out your pistol. And that's absolutely true. But I can tell you why I've taken my 9mm to protests. It has nothing to do with worry about the cops. When we were protesting out here, up there in Portland, when I lived there, it was very common for the Proud Boys to wait for such protests to break up, to be done, to finish, and then watch for stragglers to be heading back to their cars, to their parking garages. And then a gang of five or six of them show up and corner the one or two and then beat the hell out of them. So I used to take a pistol to these protests, not for the cops, but for after the protests and getting home safely. Maybe that's what Alex Pretty was up to. But it is, I will keep hammering home on this. I hope all of the gun-toting guys that I grew up with, all those big NRA supporters, heard loud and clear from our federal government that if you're carrying a gun anywhere near a cop, they're allowed to kill you. If you disagree with them, they can kill you. Now, the NRA has been remarkably silent on this. They did have one post out. There was one post where I can't remember who the politician was. I think it was maybe an assistant attorney, actually, who had tried to make that point about not taking a gun to a protest, not being armed. And the NRA said, you know, you can't just assume someone's armed is someone you have needing to be killed. But they could make a stronger statement on this. This is the same exact thing that happened with Philando Castile in Minnesota. Philando Castile was a black man who was pulled over because, you know, he was driving and he was black. And he told the cops he was a lawful concealed carry holder. And they shot him anyway in the car next to his girlfriend. And the NRA said nothing. Has anyone told them that this victim's white? Maybe that might help. But maybe people are starting to get savvy to what's going on here. And that is, we are under invasion. We are in the middle of the coup. The insurrection is still going on. Just like we ended the fighting in the Civil War with the surrender at Appomattox, 1865, the Civil War continued just without shooting. Well, that's what happened in 2021. We had January 6th. We had our little Civil War. We had our little battle. And it ended the physical fighting. But for the next 4 years, the MAGA insurrection was still happening because Merrick Garland wouldn't put Donald Trump in prison. So we allowed that to fester. We allowed that to boil into what we have now, where we have an occupying force from a white Christian nationalist movement that has absolutely subverted our civil liberties. Our First Amendment, our freedom of speech being censored now, our freedom to protest being attacked, our freedom of religion, priests out there in the streets trying to pray being shot with pepper balls, our freedom of assembly obviously being attacked, our freedom to protest being documented. We got them ICE goons taking photos of us and our license plates to put us in a database to call us domestic terrorists. There have been a number of these videos now where the observers have gotten ICE agents to say, yeah, we're putting you in a little database. Have fun with that. You're going to be a domestic terrorist now. They've attacked our Second Amendment now, saying they just have the right to shoot any gun owner that happens to be in their vicinity. They've broken our Fourth Amendment by saying, oh, no, we don't need warrants to break. Judicial warrant signed by a judge. No, we just need an administrative warrant we can sign ourselves. That's what they're saying. They are saying that an ICE agent can pull out a form, I think it's called an I-205 form, I-502 form, something like that. They can pull out their little form, a little administrative form with the name of somebody they want to go after, and the ICE agent himself can sign that, and they're saying that's good enough. An ICE agent can sign his own name to a piece of paper, and then that ICE agent can break down your door. That's what they think the Fourth Amendment's all about. Our Fifth Amendment rights to not self-incriminate, once again, they're tracking us, putting us into a database, convicting us of future crime, that we're domestic terrorists. They're abrogating our Sixth Amendment rights. They're not allowing anyone in these ICE detention centers to access their lawyers. Our Eighth Amendment right against cruel and unusual punishment is being violated daily in the ICE concentration camps. You see what they're doing to us in broad daylight on the streets with multiple people filming from multiple angles? Can you imagine what they're doing in a concentration camp in Texas with no cameras around? We're going to know eventually. You're going to be shocked. Our Ninth Amendment rights that say that that we have a bunch of rights, even if they weren't written down, that if they're not rights of the state or rights of the federal government, they're our own rights. You know, like our rights to be able to walk around in our neighborhoods, our rights to be able to breathe clean air, our rights to be able to raise our kids and send them to school without worrying about them being abducted or shot or gassed. Our state's rights, our 10th Amendment rights being trampled all over, crimes being committed in Minnesota jurisdiction, where Minnesota law enforcement should be investigating it, and they're being physically blocked by the feds from being able to process these crime scenes and collect evidence. Our 14th Amendment right to equal protection under the law, obviously being abrogated, and the 15th Amendment that says none of these fuckers should even be in office in the first place because they committed an insurrection against the United States. Add to that, complete ignorance of the Emoluments Clause, openly taking bribes. We are under attack. The America that we at least believed we were living under, even if it wasn't necessarily true all the time, is going by the wayside. They don't like that America. They don't like the America of freedom and diversity and tolerance and acceptance and education and striving and ambition. They want a white Christian nationalist homeland where everyone speaks English, everyone, boys dress like boys and girls dress like girls, and everybody is straight and has 2.3 kids. They don't like the diversity. They don't like the difference. And it seems to me, when I watch that footage of Alex J. Pretty, when those goons first tackle him, it seems to me, and I, you know, there's not really audio that can verify this, so I'm just speculating. But it seems to me, I think they saw a flash of his holster in his belt there. And I think the sight of that, from the moment they saw that, it seemed like their first instinct was to try to push that guy on the ground, take his gun away, and then kill him. Because we all see in the video where the one goon takes the gun away. And the other goons can see that he's taken the gun away. And then they open fire 10 different shots on the guy. I can bet you that Bovino has given the order from on high that if you find any one of these protesters with a gun, kill them. Take them out. because they think that if they can find the guy with the gun, that's going to justify the kill. And furthermore, it's going to let the next guy with the gun out there know that he's dead if they catch him with the gun, so he might as well start shooting first. If he's going to go, he might as well take some out. And believe me, they don't care whether their own ICE goons get killed. They want to see some ICE goons get killed. Bovino, Gnome, Vance, Stephen Miller, they want to see one of their own get killed. They want this to escalate. They know the minute one of us shoots back and kills one of their ICE agents, they can go full Insurrection Act, completely inundate the blue states and blue cities with federal troops. They can federalize the guard, have us live in abject terror from now, living all the way up into the midterms. The midterms where you'll go out to the suburbs in those white-leaning counties, and gosh, it'll be all, everything will be just as normal, as usual. Go to the voting booth, vote for whoever you want. But you go into the city, you go into the urban neighborhoods, the minority districts, oh, there'll be ICE agents everywhere. There'll be Jeeps and MRAPs and all sorts of armed patrols all around the patrol, the polling places. They'll be pulling people out of line, demanding to see their ID, prove that you're a citizen. By then, they'll also have done everything they can to mess up the mail-in voting. They do not intend on surrendering power. They are not acting like a regime that ever expects it will have to face a vote. Also, as we look out internationally, I don't understand how we're not already hearing from countries calling for boycotts of the FIFA Soccer World Cup taking place in the United States of America in 2026. I don't understand why we're not hearing countries talking about boycotting the Los Angeles Olympics in 2028. We are a rogue state. We are a terrorist regime. We are attacking our own people. And we're making the world a worse place for everyone in it. But people keep going on business as usual. Politicians seem to be going business as usual. I saw statements from President Clinton and President Obama. Let me give you a little bit of President Obama's statement, President and Mrs. Obama's statement on the killing of Alex J. Preddy. The first paragraph, the killing of Alex Preddy is a heartbreaking tragedy. It should also be a wake-up call to every American, regardless of party, that many of our core values as a nation are increasingly under assault. Okay, great. But then in the next paragraph, he's got to do a little throat clearing. Federal law enforcement and immigration agents have a tough job. But Americans expect them to carry out their duties in lawful, accountable way and to work with rather than against state and local officials to ensure public safety. Federal law enforcement immigration agents just murdered a man in cold blood on the street on video. I don't care how tough their job is. Teachers have a tough job. Nurses have a tough job. Loggers have a tough job. Deliverymen have a tough job. Lots of people have tough jobs. None of them are murdering people in the streets. But this democratic reflexiveness to have to genuflect to law enforcement. Don't think that we're anti-cop. Oh, you cops, you got such a tough job. But, oh, could you please just do it a little nicer? The penultimate paragraph from President Obama. This has to stop. I would hope that after this most recent tragedy, administration officials will reconsider their approach and start finding ways to work constructively with Governor Waltz and Mayor Fryer, as well as state and local police to avert more chaos and achieve legitimate law enforcement goals. Oh, well, gosh, Barack, now that you've asked nicely, I'm sure Trump will get right on that because, you know, his whole intent this whole time was just to enforce laws, to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed, just like he swore in his oath, that you saw him swear when you went to his inauguration. You remember that? When you supported the fascist taking the oath of office and sat there and applauded in your nice suit? At least your wife had the sense not to show up. Yeah, maybe if you ask them nicely, they'll turn things around now. They'll reconsider their approach because their whole goal has been to be working constructively and averting chaos and achieving legitimate law enforcement goals. And this is the best Democratic president of my lifetime. The best. I hate to say it. Gavin Newsom has been doing a much better job of calling this out. Gavin Newsom has been reacting with the hair on fire, the gorgeously coiffed and massively producted hair on fire that this incident deserves.
I hope that we'll work better. We need to turn down the temperature. I sure hope that the Republicans, I hope.
Stop hoping. Start demanding. Start declaring. Start organizing. I thought you were a community organizer. Some action words need to happen here. Not hope. Not counting on the Republicans. It's time to understand the Republicans are the enemy. The Republicans are in full 100% support of this mafia regime, of this fascist takeover of the United States of America. They are the enemy. They are not our friends across the aisle. They are not our bipartisan cooperators. They are the enemy in our midst that must be defeated and routed and eradicated from our public life if we ever wish to move forward to the progressive Star Trek utopia we all dream of.
When politicians, community leaders, and some journalists engage in that heated rhetoric we keep talking about, when they make the choice to vilify law enforcement, calling law enforcement names like Gestapo, or using the term kidnapping, that is a choice that is made. Their actions and consequences that come from those choices.
So if we keep calling them Gestapo and saying they're kidnapping and murdering people, they'll just keep kidnapping and murdering us. That's the consequences. We made the choice to use our First Amendment rights, and so they have to kill us for it. That, of course, is Greg Bovino, the head of the SS there, talking about the terrible, terrible rhetoric, the inflamed rhetoric. You mean like calling murdered protesters domestic terrorists? You mean like calling the press the enemy of the people? You mean like calling Democrats radical leftist scum who want to destroy America? You mean like calling immigrants vermin that need to be eradicated? Once again, good for the goose, it's not good for the gander. And the open, bald-faced lying about this that we're getting has even got the New York Times. The New York Times editorial board posted, "The Trump administration is lying to our faces. Congress must act." You know you done fucked up when you got the New York Times to use the word lie. Not untruth, not falsehood, not misstatement, not appears to contradict. Lying. Lying to our faces. And the same administration that wants to try to convince you that Alex J. Pretty was some sort of domestic terrorist because he dared to have a concealed handgun that he didn't even draw, I want to take your attention back to Nevada and Cliven Bundy. You remember during the Obama years, Cliven Bundy, the father of Ammon Bundy? Yeah, Cliven Bundy, who didn't want to pay taxes on federal land, this mooch. So he had his little setup there near the freeway, and the BLM agents came down to meet with him. And Bundy had literal snipers posted. I'm looking at the picture. I remember this picture where they had the guy in a tack vest lying on the pavement, his weapon between two of those big concrete side berms that you see on the highways, drawing sniper positions on BLM agents. Weapon drawn, aimed, ready to fire. How many federal agents killed any of those Cliven Bundy guys? How many of those guys that drew sniper positions on the BLM were even arrested? much less prosecuted. None of them. None of them. The Obama administration saw these guys, these cosplay Confederates, these Nazis in training, taking up sniper positions on federal law enforcement and did nothing about it. And so, of course, that emboldened them. And then we had Clive and Bundy's son, Ammon, coming out a couple years later, taking over the Malheur Wildlife Refuge in eastern Oregon, doing a federal takeover of a federal building, an armed takeover. Did we rush in there with our federal troops and start shooting them and killing them and tear gassing them? No. We let them stay there for, I don't know, was it 40 days or something like that? Literally, the only one of these Bundy ammosexuals that ended up getting killed was one guy that the state cops had pulled over, and that guy got out of his car with the pistol drawn and came at the cops, and they had to shoot and kill him. And those Bundy types won't stop talking about it. Lavoy Finicum, I think the guy's name was. He's a martyr in their world. The guy who rushed cops with a gun. And yet those same guys will watch Fox News every night telling them that Alex J. Preddy was some sort of terrorist, an ICU nurse who worked at the VA, whose last act in life was helping a woman pushed down by ice and pepper sprayed. They want to make you believe he's the terrorist. We are only beginning to feel the effects of this fascist incursion. And even if we do manage to overcome this through outvoting it in the midterms or other means, should they become necessary, if we are ever to get past this, maybe from Trump just dying, it's going to take a long time to get us back into the citizenship of nations. We can't just go and turn back to France and Germany and UK and Australia, all our traditional allies. We can't, after Trump's gone, say, okay, well, he's gone now. You can trust us now. Everything's back to normal. No, no. Unless we throw Trump in prison and J.D. Vance in prison and Greg Bovino in prison and Stephen Miller and Kristi Noem and Marco Rubio and all of these villains, unless they're put into prison and unless we make major political changes to ensure something like this can never happen again, the rest of the world's going to look at us and say, no, we can't trust you guys. Oh, sure, you got a Democrat in now, but 4 years from now, you'll go and elect some fascist again. You'll go and elect some toady again. We're going to have to really make amends over the next couple of decades to get back in the good graces of the rest of the world.
I like tacos.
It's Taco Tuesday.
I like tacos. The 71 Cabernet. My favorite color is magenta.
What about Taco Tuesday?
Taco Tuesdays are still going down.
I like tacos and I like beer.
Taco Tuesday was a huge success, but unfortunately, we also suffered a horrible tragedy.
Trump has recently backed off of his threats to annex Greenland. As I mentioned, once the NATO allies started putting troops there on the ground, threatening that we'd spill American blood over this, and once Denmark started pulling some of their treasuries, that definitely made people take notice. And when Trump was on the Fox Business Channel, I believe it was, Maria Bartiromo was interviewing him and said, the Danish pension fund said they're exiting U.S. treasuries. U.S. companies hold trillions of stocks and bonds from the U.S. Do you worry they'll sell those in retaliation? And Trump answers, no, if they do, they do. If that happened, there'd be big retaliation on our part, and we hold all the cards. So I saw this, and it was quoted by Jim Wright, who writes out at Stone Kettle Station on Blue Sky and elsewhere. And about having all the cards, about that. A nation with $38 trillion in debt, 30% of it owned by foreign nations does not, in point of fact, hold all the cards. A nation who imports 27% of consumer goods, 26% of capital goods, and 25% of its industrial supplies does not hold all the cards. A nation that imports nearly every phone, every laptop, every server, every data storage device, every network communications device, outsources most of its software, and cannot function socially, militarily, or economically without those devices, does not hold all the cards. A nation that imports over 90% of potash fertilizer, without which its agricultural sector would fail within one growing season, does not hold all the cards. A nation that has to import 8 to 9 billion barrels of oil daily in order to keep its refineries in efficient operation does not hold all the cards. A nation that imports nearly 50% of its name brand prescription drugs and 90% of generics, and furthermore imports nearly 70% of active ingredients for domestic manufacture, does not hold all the cards. A nation that depends on foreign allies, bases, airspace, sea lanes, supply, and assets to maintain a global military presence does not hold all the cards. The only card Trump is holding at the moment is the Joker. And the other thing that kills me about this, got this clip here from the Benny Johnson show, and he's talking to Representative Greg Stube.
So what you're saying is that President Trump just followed the art of the deal, like the exact same thing that he's been doing for the last 40 years since he wrote the damn book.
Yeah, 100%. And what strikes me is, you know, you see Macron and the French sending troops to Greenland. Like, I would love to see the United States military up against French troops in Greenland, because that would not last very long. It would be a very a small skirmish. But it's just interesting how world leaders like Macron try to buff up their chest to the president. And then lo and behold, there's a deal that's cut and he looks like an idiot for trying to push back on something that we need strategically. And we don't care about what Macron and the French want.
So I love these guys that think our NATO allies, with whom we've been training for decades, to whom we sell multiple weapons and weapon systems, would somehow be pussies on the battlefield, but just somehow be pushovers. Like, you don't think the bullet from an M16 or a M4 pierces American flesh as easily as it pierces French flesh? Like, you don't think they have drones too? You don't think they have anti-aircraft batteries as well? Like, okay, sure, we've got the world's largest military, and yeah, if we went to all-out battle against the country of France, maybe we could dominate it militarily, but you don't think Americans would die? Like, these guys are so brave with other people's kids. Like, okay, Greg Stube, you think the French aren't so great at fighting. Suit up, buddy. Lock and load. Head up to Greenland and fire on them yourself. I get so tired of these talking head pundit podcaster types and their fascist political guests who play so fast and loose with American soldiers' lives, which are usually young, black, brown, and poor people, not the sons of people like Greg Stube, who always managed to get out of that kind of stuff. But Trump always chickens out. They threaten him with military force, they threaten him with economic devastation, and he backed down like he always does. And of course, he's backing down and declaring victory. Oh, we've got a framework of a deal on Greenland. Like, we absolutely have to have Greenland because of the security issues. Even though we're allies with the country that owns Greenland, and we have a North Atlantic Treaty organization that covers the entire Arctic, and we're allies with Canada and Norway and Finland and Sweden. Like, we've got plenty of control over that. And we've already got a U.S. Space Force base there and permission to expand and build more bases if we want to. It really is. This whole thing is really just stupid. Trump sees maps on walls, sees this big, huge island that looks bigger than Africa and thinks that we ought to own it. Because he wants some sort of legacy. He wants to be seen as someone who expanded America's territory. And numerous people have pointed out that Greenland's not that big. It's the Mercator projection that stretches out the Arctic and the Antarctic that makes it look that big. If you superimpose Greenland over the United States, it runs from about Chicago down to like Arkansas. It's big. It's the world's biggest island, but it's not like bigger than the continent of Africa. But really, Trump is just that dumb that he probably just sees, ooh, look, big land, me want. And don't think this is over. He's only backing down now temporarily. He'll be back at this when he needs another fresh distraction from the fact that he is a lifelong pedophile, was friends with the world's greatest pedophile sex trafficker, had him killed in the prison that he controlled, and is currently covering up to protect all his pedophile buddies. That's right, we have not forgotten about the Epstein files.
I mean, we're the worst team the world has ever known.
The greatest collection of shifty-eyed, double-crossing, two-faced liars.
Den of thieves filled with cutthroats and murderers.
No wonder you're the worst team in the world.
So you see that Trump has set up the League of Supervillains. I'm sorry, the Board of Peace. Yeah, this Board of Peace. You got to spend $1 billion, $1 billion to be a member of his so-called Board of Peace for Gaza. And it's got, what a stellar lineup of human rights abusers and authoritarian thugs, you know, Saudi Arabia, Kazakhstan, just the worst of the worst, Argentina. You know, it's pretty bad when you have your signing ceremony to form your Board of Peace and two of its founding members, Vladimir Putin and Bibi Netanyahu, can't fly to the ceremony because they'd be arrested at the airport by the International Criminal Court for war crimes. That's a hell of a Board of Peace you got going there. This, of course, is just Trump setting himself up for post-2028. This is so he can flee to Qatar, where they're the $1 billion... entry fee is being stored, right? Plus, he's got other slush funds there. He's got the slush fund from the Venezuelan oil set up in Qatar as well. So that post-2028, he can flee the United States. Hell, maybe post-2026, even if we have decent midterm elections and we start holding people to account. Who knows? I would not be surprised. Seriously, would not be surprised after the 2026 election if there is a massive sweep. Let's say we get, massive victory in the House and we even manage to bring over the Senate and maybe things get more escalated and it gets so bad that it appears that an impeachment could be successful. If there comes a time when an impeachment could be successful, that Trump fears that the Senate could actually vote to remove him, he will flee. He will run from this country rather than face justice. If it looks like it may actually happen, that his stall and delay tactics won't work, that his handpicked concierge, judges, and Supreme Court won't save him, he will flee. And that's what he's setting up. He's setting up his nest here. He's setting it up so that even if he flees in 2026, he can be president in exile, head of the Board of Peace, stocked with billions of dollars in assets, no accountability, an army full of ICE goons who, after 2026, what if we disbanded ICE and we abolished ICE and all those guys were fired? You think they're going anywhere? You think they're going to change their evil ways? Or do you think they're set up on a Discord server right now? Do you think maybe all those ICE guys are ready to be plugged in right now to being paid online to getting their regular paychecks from the Board of Peace? For Trump to be sitting there in Qatar funding the continued insurrection from abroad, from exile. That's really what I think he's up to this. setting himself up to continue affecting the United States so that while he's in exile, perhaps the takeover can continue and he can be brought back and put into his rightful place as king of the United States. I know, even as I'm saying this stuff, it sounds sensationalist and ludicrous, but after what we've been through this past decade, I can put nothing past this man. I don't know what we do about this Board of Peace. I don't know how the rest of the world deals with this so-called Board of Peace. Or even if it would continue to exist after Trump's death. All I know is that Trump's Board of Peace seems far more akin to the League of Supervillains than the UN seems close to the League of Superheroes. Well, that's all the time we've got for today's podcast. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Is that absolutely necessary?
And is that absolutely necessary?
Now, is that absolutely necessary?
Well, today for the post-credits scene, we actually get a little bit of breaking news. A Republican candidate in the state of Minnesota, Chris Madel, has dropped out of the race for Minnesota governor. Let me read to you from the post. Republican Chris Madel made a stunning exit from the Minnesota governor's race on January 26th, saying he cannot support the national GOP's, quote, stated retribution on the citizens of our state, nor can I count myself a member of a party that would do so. In a surprise video announcement, the Minneapolis attorney said he supported the originally stated goals of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement's operation in Minnesota, including the deportation of undocumented immigrants with serious criminal records, but the effort, quote, has expanded far beyond its stated focus on true public safety threats. United States citizens, particularly those of color, live in fear. United States citizens are carrying papers to prove their citizenship. That's wrong. End quote, Madel says. That's how quickly the winds are shifting now. A Republican running for governor in Minnesota has not just dropped out of the race, he has dropped being a Republican after this second murder. Recognize this was a guy who 2 weeks ago, after Renee Good was shot, announced that he was providing legal help to Jonathan Ross. So in just 2 weeks, he's gone from let me support the ICE murderer to I can't be a Republican anymore. Ah, the good trouble is just starting, isn't it? You can contact me by email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRuss.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.